Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, Packers fans. Welcome to the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here at Lambeau Field, where the Packers have now lost 4 in a row, 5 overall, with a 24-10 loss to the Minnesota Vikings. You know how sometimes we say, like, well, it was closer than the score indicates, or it wasn't as close as the score indicates. This is a game that in some ways was closer than the score indicates and was actually not near as close as the score indicated, if that makes sense. The Vikings squandered some opportunities, and the Packers did not take advantage. At one point, going into halftime, this game could have been 21-0 in favor of the Vikings. And at one point in the fourth quarter, this game easily could have been tied 24-24 with a chance to win it if you're the Packers. Neither of those things happened. Spoon, let me just kind of start with you. I don't know specifically what more we can say about this team, but just your impression of the Green Bay Packers coming off this loss?
Bad, bad, and bad. I don't know.
Wow,
bad and worse.
You work in words, don't you?
it's hard to put into words. It's really, their offense is just a mess, and it's so many different things. You can't really just say, take this guy out and it's going to solve it. You know, pull Rasheed Walker out and they'll be fine. You know, put Josh Nyman in there and that's going to make a huge difference. Well, no. I mean, you still got guys dropping passes that keep drives alive. You got – here's an example of what I think is wrong with the Packers. Look at – what the Vikings did on third downs and who they went to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jordan Addison is their young receiver, star receiver, but who did they go to? Hockenson. Mm-hmm. Hockenson. Osborne. Hockenson. They had 6 third downs. I went back and looked at it. 6 third downs in which they completed all 6 passes for 108 yards and a touchdown to those two guys.
Wow.
So, you know, there's something to be said about having guys who know how to play the game, who know how to get open, who, have a rapport with their quarterback. And I don't see anybody, there's not one player on the Packers who has that sort of, other than Aaron Jones. Maybe Aaron Jones is the lone guy and nobody else. So that's my impression. That's why they stink.
Mm-hmm. You know, for the first few weeks, we talked about youth, youth, youth. I heard someone in the locker room say today, does it matter how young, like, it's not their fault they're young. They don't have anybody in that room to lead them, talking about the receivers. But at the same time, there was another fair point made when we were all standing there talking to Rasul Douglas. He said, we've all played football all of our lives. The only person in here that can justifiably use the youth excuse is Kenneth, because he had never played American football until a year ago. So, I mean, Ryan, which of those two sides of the coin do you give more credit to?
I think, first of all, it's a 4-game losing streak. But the three-game losing streak against the Raiders, the Broncos, and a Vikings team without Justin Jefferson, those are 3 bad teams. The Vikings are not good. They're not a good team. Now their season's basically over because they don't have Kirk Cousins the rest of the season, tore his Achilles. But the Vikings are not a good team. The Broncos and the Raiders are 2 of the worst teams in the NFL. So
Broncos did beat the Chiefs today.
They did.
Yeah, but just see when the season's over. The Chiefs have not been playing that well. Those are 2 of the worst teams
in the NFL. Taylor Swift wasn't there.
When you look at big picture, there's not a lot of wins left on the schedule. And maybe when the Bears come to town, maybe the Panthers, because the Panthers are terrible. Maybe the Vikings now in Minnesota without Kirk Cousins, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot of wins there. I saw a lot of mistakes today that had very little to do with Jordan Love. And I'm not saying that Jordan Love is playing great football and everyone else around him stinks. He's part of the problem. But when you look at what's going on, from the offensive line issues to the number of dropped passes to Quay Walker on defense, I mean, the defense has been playing better than the offense, clearly, but he's got a chance to make an easy interception early in the game. It's still knotted at zero. Would have given the Packers short field. This Packers defense is, or offense has needed the Packers defense to step up and make game-turning plays, and he drops that. What Jordan Love's being asked to do right now is what an MVP-level quarterback can maybe do, which is cover up a lot of mistakes around him. Aaron Rodgers in his prime, he covered up a lot of mistakes that were made around him. It's hard to expect a quarterback in his first year starting to cover up this many mistakes around him. That initial drive of the game, they have a third and one, and they call an RPO. And on an RPO, your linemen are blocking. They're run blocking, so they're going to be downfield. He's got to break out of a sack, so the play extends. And by the time he throws an absolute dime, is a heck of a play by Jordan Love, a dime on the right sideline to Romeo Doubs, Rashid Walker is downfield because it's an RPO. And then you've got a five-yard penalty instead of 20-yard gain on third and one. They have a free play on third and six the next snap. He misses Jaden Reed on a free shot play down the field. Actually overthrew him, which rarely happens, but that's on Jordan Love. But it was a free play. It's third and one again. And then they just don't block Jordan Phillips on a dive to A.J. Dillon. He's stuffed for no gain. They miscommunicate before the snap, and no one picks up the nose tackle. That's not on Jordan Love. In that sequence, Jordan Love missed a free play, but he also had a highlight 20-yard completion, breaking a sack on a third and one. And it was just time after time that you're seeing all these issues. Like, I'm not saying that he's playing great football, but you can't expect a first-year quarterback to mask all these issues they have on their team.
Fair point. Let's kind of go into the RPO part of it a little bit, too, because there was also another play down on the goal line where he had an RPO, and he pulled it from A.J. Dillon and tried to throw it to – and now I'm blanking on who he tried to – Watson. That was a bad read.
Yep.
Fair to say? That was a bad read because A.J. Dillon could have walked in.
Fallen in, yeah.
Yeah.
And they did score on the next play, right?
They did. Yeah. They did. But they got kind of lucky because they were on the one-yard line, and it took them five shots from the one-yard line, and they got five opportunities because of a Vikings penalty. Five chances from the one-yard line before you finally get in.
That's bad. Mm-hmm. And you know, that wasn't the only thing Jordan Love did bad. Like, you know, I saw him, he again gets kind of locked in on somebody and just throws it to a guy who's covered. And, you know, you can do that occasionally and hope your guy will fight for the ball. But a lot of times, what I saw at the end of the game was what Jordan Love needs to do more, which is dance around in the pocket and let his guys get some time to get open and then try to make a play. And he started, you could see him, he'd go to the right and then he'd kind of dip under and go, you know, go to the left and he'd wait, and then he'd hit a guy. Now, he couldn't do that when they were blitzing, but that's more of what he has to do instead of three steps, robot, okay, throw it right there. You know, that's where I'm supposed to go, so I'm going to throw it right there. They need, you know, his guys are running probably the way they're supposed to run stuff. They need some players who know how to get open. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the route needs to be adjusted a little bit so the guy is open, or that you beat him off the line, or you understand what the coverage is. And this whole going young thing has just really blown up on them because I think they thought that LaFleur could coach them out of it. You know, that him and his staff could coach them out of the youth and make them special, and they haven't. If anything, you know, they've just gotten worse over the last couple of weeks.
I want to add, on the interception of Jaden Reed, Jordan Love underthrew that play. I mean, Jaden Reed was breaking open. And first of all, Jaden Reed had to slow down. He was breaking open. anytime you force your receiver down the field to turn his back all the way around 180 degrees and turn his back to your end zone, you've underthrown your receiver. So, you know, there's certainly from accuracy, and I think you just made great points on being too robotic at times. There's certainly a lot of blame. Jordan Love's not helping the issue here. He just – there's so many other issues than Jordan Love.
Yeah, I think we did see him get into a little bit of a rhythm in the second, fourth quarter, mm-hmm. you know, where he – that the throw he made to Wicks that he dropped, you know, mm-hmm. that should have been a touchdown yep. or a first down. Who else dropped?
Watson had some chances in the end zone. He had two targets in the end zone. Both would have been really tough catches, but if you're a number one receiver, you can make plays on those balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where he has very – poor ball awareness. Like, where is the ball going to be when it gets to me? And usually he's just kind of falling backwards or jumping up straight up high. He's got to get in front of these guys.
How much of that do you attribute to the fact that he played at an FCS school where he was probably just bigger, faster, stronger than everybody?
Yeah, he's probably open every single time.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have to do very many contested catches, I'm sure.
And last year, when he was able to kind of come on towards the end of the year, he had a Hall of Fame quarterback kind of, you know, leading him with the ball. And now he's having a quarterback where he's going to have to do some of the work. And that's probably never been Christian Watson's game before.
You know, on the fade to Christian Watson in the end zone, that was a money ball. From Jordan Love, tight coverage, and he put it right on his hands. You cannot throw that ball better than he did. The second one, I watched that play unfold, and Christian Watson turned and identified the football before the two Vikings defenders that were on him did. I mean, that gives you an advantage. He had a good track on that football, and yeah, there was traffic there. It was a tough catch, but it hit his hands.
Yeah,
it hit his hands. Tough catches need to be made in the NFL.
As I was about to say, you're in the NFL, you're going to have to catch them tough more often than not.
Yep, and yep. So. I mean, it got knocked down. I mean, the guy raked him down, but you got to have strong hands.
Yep.
You know, I would suspect that Dobbs could come down with that.
I knew you were about to say that.
Yeah, you know, or...
Justin Jefferson could come down with that.
Yeah.
You know, top receivers can come down with that.
Is that something that is... Do you get the scars, the calluses built up on things like that through practice, through games, through jugs machines? Like, how does he address this?
Well, it's an attitude, too. It's like, nobody is going to get the ball except me. You know, Davante Adams had that attitude every single time, you know. And he developed the late hands where he wouldn't show, you know, that he was getting ready to make a catch until the last second. That stuff, that's experience. But Davante Adams had the, this is my ball and no one else's. And he had that coming out of college, too. I think you got to go and get someone like that now. You know, they really need someone who can do something in the red zone. You know, or someone who's consistent. In the middle of field, tight ends, their tight ends, they get nothing out of those guys, zero. I mean, look at how important Hockenson is to Minnesota's team. They just get nothing.
The attitude part that you were mentioning, that's where I think, Cassidy, some guys do develop that callus and they do grow out of it, and some guys don't. I don't think we know right now what it'll be with Christian Watson, but – some guys do, and some guys don't. It comes down to that attitude.
When you say they've got to get somebody, do you mean before Tuesday?
Yeah. I mean, I still think that there's going to be some sellers out there. I think the Packers either need to be buyers or sellers. So, you know, just standing pat is, I mean, they're going to have
to. If you stand pat, you say this season's a wash.
Yeah. I mean, They're gonna lose 10 straight games if they just stick with who they have right now. I mean, look at their schedule; it's brutal.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have some ideas on this, but who would they be selling?
Oh, they could sell Rasul Douglas. They could sell Preston Smith. They could get a lot. You know, yeah. Preston Smith's playing really well. AJ Dillon, I would consider selling. They could consider Rashawn Gary. I mean, they could get a huge amount, and then they don't have to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, they drafted Van Ness. I know, but you're cashing in your season is what I'm saying. If you're selling, you don't care. You know, you're just trying to get draft picks up the butt. You know, and you know, those are the kind of guys who you could sell. Runyon is a guy that maybe you could get something for. I just if you're going to do that. But, you know, if you stand pat, to me it's the worst message. It's like, okay, we're going to, you know, we're going to do the definition of insanity. You know, we're going to keep doing the same thing over and over again. We're going to hope we get to the certain point. And I'm telling you, if you lose 10 straight games, you know, then Gutekunst's job is in trouble, and LaFleur's job is in trouble, and Jordan Love goes into next season, you know, a wreck.
And the season was pointless.
The season was pointless, and you just ticked off, you know, what did Aaron Jones take a $5 million pay cut for to come back to this crap, you know? You know, what did Elgton Jenkins do to come back from, you know, ACL and really work his butt off and come back from a MCL and, you know, 3 weeks? It just, to me, I think if you just sit there, then you're sending a pretty bad message to everybody.
It's a very, very good point.
Last thing, sorry. It could also mean shaking up the coaching staff. That would be another thing to do. You know, like, don't accept that what you're doing is acceptable. And you got to show your players, you know, hey, we take some responsibility too, some accountability. That's it.
Well, you actually just made my transition for me, because that's what we were about to talk about. Is, do you think we see some in-season coaching changes? I feel pretty confident saying LaFleur is safe this year. This is his honeymoon year. He's not even going to be on the hot seat necessarily this year.
I don't think so.
But to use your word, that's exactly the word I was going to use. And Ryan, I'll start with you here. If you're going to demand accountability from your players, should you not also demand it from your coaches? And if that's the case, if you're LaFleur, this is, Ryan and I were talking about this earlier, LaFleur's a great play caller, but part of being a head coach is also being the CEO. And sometimes being the CEO means making a hard decision and looking your friend in the face and saying, thanks for the memories, but it's time to move forward. If you're going to ask your players to be accountable, do you not have to be accountable as the coach as well, Ryan?
I think that Matt LaFleur already missed an opportunity to do that this past offseason. For five games, the Packers defense was okay. It's pretty good. It's better. But as the totality of last season, the Packers defense was a mess. It was terrible. There's no other way to put it. And it was a defense stocked with first-round picks and guys that should have been game changers, guys that should have developed, and they didn't. They didn't make a difference. And this was when they were all in for the Super Bowl. And at that point, Matt LaFleur has an opportunity for accountability to fire Joe Barry, say it wasn't good enough, because it wasn't, and then to hire a new defensive coordinator. And that, you know, Spoon was making the point before we started, that sends a message right there. You don't have to be held accountable. You can do whatever you want. Now, the Packers defense has not been the issue this season. They haven't been great either. I'm not saying that. I mean, they're playing much better than the offense right now. But still,
as a low bar.
Yeah, it's a bar set in hell. But still, there wasn't accountability there. Now, you look at your two most important assistant coaches, or your two coordinators on offense and defense. Defense, Joe Barry, we know that. Offensive coordinator, Adam Sinovich, he did a fine job as an offensive line coach. But his job, he's doing essentially the same thing that Nathaniel Hackett did. He's not the play caller on offense. He's responsible for helping organize the game plans, presenting it to the players, running the meetings during the week, doing those things. Well, you watch the Packers offense in these past five first halves. It's 163 first half minutes since they scored a first half touchdown. Clearly, the game plan is not getting relayed to the players. And Zach Tom told me point blank today, we're not ready to play to start the game. Not ready to play. Obviously, he said, obviously, you look at these first halves. We're not ready to play. Goes down to being the conduit between those meetings, getting the game plan to the players and having them ready to execute it in the first half. That's not happening. So your two primary assistant coach positions, it's not looking good right now. Could there be an in-season shakeup? I doubt it, because that's not the precedent that Matt LaFleur has set. I would imagine, though, that this offseason, one, if this continues, Matt LaFleur will enter 2024 on the hot seat. And two, he's going to have to make some changes with his staff. There's going to have to be some revamping of his staff.
Spoon, I get that that's not his precedent, but if you're Brian Gutekunst, do you push him on it?
I would certainly have discussions. Now, the staff is his. Mm-hmm. Under the setup, the staff is LaFleur's. The problem with Barry right now is to fire him would look just terrible. Mm-hmm. Like
he was a scapegoat?
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't even get your offense to get a first down in the first half, hardly, and you're going to fire the defensive coordinator? Okay, so that one's gone, you know? But I think he could move Stanovich, keep his title, his pay will stay the same, and put him on the offensive line and make Butkus the assistant again. When Stanovich was the offensive line coach, they were pretty good. Now, they had Bakhtiari too, but I know Rodgers used to compliment him for his game plans and run game plans, and maybe I know he spends a lot of time with the offensive line, but I think he needs to be in charge there. He needs to be the guy who's who is the bottom line offensive line guy.
And just not have a coordinator?
Yeah, LaFleur would have to be his own coordinator. He'd have to figure out a way to give up something else, you know. I don't think it's that hard. He could split analyst. Up the duties. Mm-hmm. You know, Tom Clements could certainly pick up some of the duties. But, you know, an offensive coordinator is more or less just like a supervisor. He's mm-hmm. make sure everybody does their job. And I think that would be one shakeup they need to do.
Mm. And that's more so not about shifting anyone to the coordinator. It's about shifting Stanovich totally back to the offensive line. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, putting that emphasis, you know, letting him take over and see if it makes a difference.
You got to try something.
Yeah, you do. You got to try something. And I don't know exactly, you know, for the most part, their staff, you know, Ben Sermons has been the running backs coach, and I don't think you can ever make any complaints about their running backs. Right. You know, Dylan's kind of gone downhill a little bit, but I don't think that's Sermon's fault. You know, tight ends, John's a new coach. I don't know that much about him.
And he was originally, I think, a quarterback's coach when he was on the college level.
Yeah.
And I know guys shift within the offense, but I think there's something to having somebody who's a specialist.
I know their tight ends can't block. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen it time and again that they're not very good blockers. I don't think I've seen a huge improvement there. You know, Vrabel, I know Adams always seemed to like Vrabel. He's the wide receivers coach. And I don't know. You know, I wouldn't put this year on my resume, but I don't know that he's a terrible coach.
I think the biggest issue is that if Matt LaFleur gets to the end of this season and decides that it's in the best interest of not just the team, but especially the offense, to delegate play calling, there is no one on this offensive staff right now that you can do that to.
Right.
So that's where they need to start. To give him even the option, the possibility of doing that, you're not giving it to anyone on this offensive staff. They need to bring someone in that has the experience and can be an option for that, a possibility.
I've mentioned this before, too. I think they need to bring in an experienced guy who's out of work right now and just bring him in as an analyst or come in and write reports on what he's seeing, or, you know, come in and have some authority too.
You know, that just made me think of this. I don't know if y'all listened to the Kelce Brothers podcast, but Jason Kelce was talking about when they were trying to really kind of put the finer touches on the tush push, or the brotherly shove, as they call it. Mm-hmm. They brought in a rugby player, which I know that's a lot of people's argument against it, but they brought in a rugby player to teach them how to do it. So it's just something as simple as like, hey, I'm willing to look outside the building.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to do something different to make us better.
Right.
And I think the biggest thing that get coaches fired are is putting their head in the sand and being like, I've got it figured out. I've just got to get the players out of it. And let me ask y'all's opinion on this too, because maybe I'm making too much of it. It just feels like there's been a few weeks now where LaFleur has talked a lot about the execution not being there, which I get. But at some point, you're the head coach. The buck's got to stop with you, right?
Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen receivers wide open?
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, we saw maybe one today. Was it Reed maybe was open across the middle?
Yeah, that's the only one where he broke free of the defense. Yeah.
Christian Watson kind of had a beat on one down the right sideline late in the game. That portion of the game at the end where you were mentioning to earlier, there were some guys that were more open then, but why was that? Because Jordan Love was dancing the block and giving him time.
Yeah.
And if they're not executing over and over and over, at some point I feel like you have to ask, are you putting them in the position to execute?
Yeah.
While we're talking about like the late games doing better, and that being the case again today, LaFleur did say that they were in the 2-minute drill almost the entirety of the second half. And I know a lot of fans, because I've already kind of seen some of it on social media, are immediately going to ask, well, then why aren't we doing that the whole game?
Mm-hmm.
Explain why that's not tenable.
Well, they didn't plan for it, you know.
Right.
So they have a 2-minute drill on Thursdays, you know, every week. So they have enough, you know, they have enough plays that they can go to. But if they're going to go no huddle, then they've got to, that's their game plan. They've got to come up with plays. Love has to know what, you know, catalog of plays mm-hmm. he can go to. You know, have them on his wrist or whatever. It's, you got to practice it. You have to practice it, and they just practice it for 2 minutes.
And a 2-minute drill greatly funnels down your offense, correct? Like, because it's stuff Love has to be able to call with no huddle on the field without looking at the sideline.
Well, you're never
almost
changing personnel.
Right.
That's the big thing, is that you're always going with the same personnel, and so you're mm-hmm. not taking the defense out of its personnel. You're not causing any it's harder to be unpredictable, too,
mm-hmm.
when you do that.
Yeah.
But the tempo is good. I mean, the tempo was really good for them. They need to figure how to do that.
Well, you know, Matt LaFleur kind of gave, for lack of a better word, a little bit of a gem on what these constant first half holes mean. He said, we're not even getting into the game plan. Like,
mm-hmm.
whole second half, they're 2-minute offense today. That's not what they're practicing. They're practicing a game plan. There is a game plan that they practice during the week. But when you are in hole every single week at halftime, the second half you're never getting into the game plan. You can't even run what you've been practicing all week preparing for an opponent. So that catches up to you too.
Maybe they should just run like a motion offense.
You know, just the hold
yeah,
down.
Yeah, like
they could try scoring in the first half. That would be helpful.
That too. We've kind of dissected the Adam Stinovich of it all. I want to flip over to Joe Barry real quick. You're right. You fired Joe Barry right now. It looks like you're getting rid of a scapegoat, and I don't think it solves any of your problems, at least from a PR standpoint and in the locker room. The locker room's going to see that as an easy out. And you probably lose their trust if you do that. That being said, as we said, the defense isn't the reason they're necessarily losing, but they're also not the reason they're winning,
because mm-hmm.
they're not winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some issues that have to be addressed on defense, and I'm curious how y'all think they should go about it. For example, there were a couple of different times today where we saw the Vikings run the same routes that some of these opponents have the past few weeks, and you didn't see the Packers adjust. There was a play that, you know, Douglas was telling us afterwards that Hawkinson ran on him that was the exact same rub route the Broncos ran last week for the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, of course they're going to do that because they've seen on film that it'll work. Like, you know, and then there was just some other plays where it seems like they're playing sort of a mixture of man and zone, which is fine. But then a guy cuts across the field and he doesn't get passed off, or he's not getting picked up correctly. Yeah,
that was the Douglas play where he sent the guy off. And I don't know who was supposed to pick him up, though. I mean, who was supposed to pick him up there? Quay Walker was in the middle of the field, but he looked like to me like he was playing zone. Jonathan Owens went and chased a guy in the flat.
Mm-hmm.
So he had that guy. I don't know
who was supposed to pick that guy up. I want to say Campbell was there, too. But, does he pick him up?
Yeah.
You mean there's more miscommunication
in
pass coverage for Joe Barry's defense?
Here's my question. Here's what I'm kind of getting at.
It was the exact same play that Justin Jefferson in week one.
Yeah.
Remember when Jair Alexander dropped the coverage because he wasn't sure, am I supposed to keep following him? Or, there's some kind of communication where either Douglas goes and takes him or he doesn't. He leaves him for someone else. I'm not going to say it's the exact same play, but it's similar concept, it seems like to me. And I thought they had that cleaned up. I thought they had figured that out.
They did the last five games last year.
So here's what I'm getting at here. And that Osborne play is a really good example from today, but that happened a few different times today because I just, I track it as it's going. And there, I remember, 4 or 5 times typing out, didn't get picked up, passed over, didn't get picked up. And Hockenson and Osborne were the main, ones that were doing that. And so is that, if you're going to play this defensive scheme, is that something where it's almost too simplistic for the offense to figure out? And therefore, do you if you're going to play this mixed coverage, do you disguise it a little bit more? Is it simply lack of communication? And is that on the players or the coaches? What's the crux here?
Well, I'm not smart enough to know that.
I don't believe
what
that.
What exactly the Vikings were planning and what they saw. And they studied Barry's tendencies and they probably saw some stuff. The Packers, there's a few things that are like Achilles' heels to them. And one is the tight end, kind of in the middle of the field. The other is goal line. They're terrible on the goal line. They always seem to just part the Red Sea on the goal line. And then they always seem to, coming off a good play by the offense, maybe the offense scores, they always seem to give up a drive. And I wonder if it's because, Barry gets into this thing where I'm not going to get too aggressive because we just scored. And so I'm going to play it safe and we're going to, force them to punt eventually. I don't know. I don't know if that's really the case. I
just don't feel like that should be the mindset your coordinator has.
Look at what the Vikings did after they picked off Love. They go right to the end zone right away. And that moment, that is such a huge momentum shift.
That was ball game right there.
One place, boom, touchdown. And the defense needs to do that. They need to find a way to, the offense just scored. Well, let's get the ball back. Preston Smith did that. He got the ball out. I don't know that they had just scored. I can't remember. But, he got them the ball in really good. That was a big play they were looking for. Rest of the time, I don't know. They just, it seems like they don't, something happens, and I suspect it has to do something with how the game's being called.
Mm. Ryan, any thoughts before I move on?
I think the biggest issue that the defense has by far this season is not enough takeaways. And, today you have a bunny just hit your linebacker's hands, and it's a close game, and they can swing it, but it's a dropped interception. What did Joe Barry tell us this week? Takeaway Thursdays? Takeaways on defense in some ways correlates to a coach being able to put his defenders in the right position to get takeaways. Sometimes it's a bounce of the ball, but you got to be in right position to be able to generate these plays. And I don't know where they rank in the NFL, but it can't be high in takeaways. They're just not nearly enough. And so, they held opponents the last two games before today below 20 points. Today, 24 points. You know, the biggest issue today in terms of the scoreboard was that after the Love interception, giving up a touchdown right away. For the most part, the defense is not playing terrible when it comes to scoring defense, and that's the bottom line. But with an offense that's struggling this much, and Rasul Douglas said it today, I mean, they got to be perfect because offensive coordinators have all the time and patience in the world against the offense they're calling plays against, mm-hmm. because Packers can't get any drive sustained. And Rashawn Gary, I think, said that they need takeaways to give the ball back to the offense as much as possible because they need as many drives as possible to work out their kinks and figure out what's wrong and get untracked. And they're not getting those plays. That's a huge issue, and it's not complimentary football.
That quote by Douglas I thought was so telling, and he was kind of given lackadaisical. He basically said opposing offenses know that our offense isn't going to score, so they can take their time with their game plan against us because they know it'll eventually, like, gear up.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
If they're going to run the ball, they can run the ball all day
because
they know when our offense – essentially saying they know the Packers aren't going to score.
Right.
So they'll just keep leaning on their run game because eventually it'll break.
Oh, that's pretty interesting, yeah.
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 It's true.
I mean, the Packers did not have a pass rush today. You got to give the Vikings offensive line a lot of credit. They stopped San Francisco last week, and then they just shut down the Packers until the end. You know, then they got a couple of sacks on them. So
I thought today was Kirk Cousins made a lot of Houdini plays to get while he's getting hit to get rid of the ball.
Yeah,
a lot of those types of plays. I thought the pass rush was okay. I didn't watch the Vikings offensive line against the 49ers on Monday night, but obviously they pitched a shutout against one of the best pass rushers in the league. I thought they were giving up some rushes, but Kirk Cousins, before the Achilles, he there was 2, 3, 4 times that he's getting hit as he's releasing the ball, and he was able to make some plays.
Yeah, he got hit a couple of times, but they couldn't sack him, and there were a lot of times I thought that he had plenty of time. I thought their line played really well. I think I thought they didn't get much up the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't – usually Kenny Clark is more has more pressure up the middle, Brooks, and it just didn't seem like they were doing it. Now, the Vikings were keeping in five or six guys, and the Packers were always rushing four.
You know what did stand out to me as kind of impressive on that front today is that for someone who is as big as he is, we saw T.J. Slaton almost even getting to the edge more, like on some of those run plays. Like, he had a pretty decent day.
Yeah, I didn't spend a lot of time watching him, but he's been playing pretty well this year.
Yeah. I'm curious how many tackles he had, because I know I'm thinking of one in particular, and I think there were a couple that they were out on the edge.
Mm.
That's a big boy to be running on out there to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. He finished with – he had 9 tackles.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Wow. He had 4 solo and 5 assist. 9 tackles.
That's a lot for a nose tackle.
Yeah. Speaking of offensive line, let's flip to the Packers offensive line. At one point, Rashid Walker was taken out. It was after he gave up a big sack. Yosh Nijman came in, and then Yosh Nijman got hurt, so Rashid Walker went back in. LaFleur was asked about it afterwards, and he said, "I thought we just needed a change." Is that a change that needs to happen permanently?
Well, it reminded me of when I asked Adam Stenovich this week about Yosh Nijman not getting any snaps and if he was in consideration. He said, yeah, he is in consideration. He feels like, because Adam Stenovich was pretty harsh on him at the start of the season about some guys respond to competition, others don't, indicating that Yosh Nijman hadn't. But he said that since then, he thinks Yosh Nijman's done a really good job and he was in consideration, and it was a very short leash on Rashid Walker today. And then when he came back in for Yosh Nijman, almost immediately he has a false start. So, the ineligible receiver downfield penalty on him on the first third down, that's part of just extending an RPO. But he did get beat on that to give up the quarterback hit, if I'm not mistaken, which is why the RPO was extended. Gave up the sack And it wasn't just him. I mean, John Runyon has a holding penalty that makes a 5-yard run on a 2nd and 6 and sets 2nd and 16, which leads to a 3rd and 16. Josh Nyman did have a face mask penalty while allowing a sack. The entire offensive line, I think Jordan Love has sacked 4 times today. That's not good. The entire offensive line struggled. Zach Tom even gave up a strip sack at the very end. And then run blocking. A.J. Dillon had a 3rd and 1 opportunity on that first drive, and they don't block Jordan Phillips. So there's a lot of issues on that unit.
As it gets colder, I fully expect Keyshawn Nixon to be more of an impact in these games than he has been when, you know, the ball's not sailing as far. As of right now, he hasn't been. He had some pretty decent returns today, but then he also had some bad ones. Is that one of those things where, again, you just kind of wait till it gets colder? Or, I mean, at the same time, he's a kickoff return in the NFL. He's got to be able to handle it no matter the conditions. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I thought the Vikings had a good game plan for him. You know, they pinned him in the corner almost every single time. And he had to, you know, they popped it up and they made him fielded at the 5, and the one time it went out of bounds. So I think I'm interested to hear what Bisaccia has to say about that, whether there were some things Keyshawn Nixon, there were a couple times he looked like he was going to break it, and then somebody just came out of, you know, like, I don't know if someone missed a block or what.
Yeah, that was my next question, was how much of that is his coverage or his protection team, you know? Yeah,
I don't know.
Because, you know, you think back to the – this is probably why the Vikings were so careful with how they kicked to him. You think back to that huge return for a touchdown he had last year against the Vikings. Mm-hmm. That was excellent blocking as well. And that was a lot of his good returns were blocking, which also makes me wonder if this is where we're seeing – if we're really seeing the difference it makes not having Tyler Davis on the field. Is that putting a lot on one person?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he was – he was definitely one of their better special teams players, but
he was also who checked them into coverage a lot. So I'm not even saying just for his blocking, but I'm saying just for his
maybe you know, that'd be an interesting
recognizing
question.
You know, what the other team is doing and adjusting his coverage team.
Yeah.
So
possible.
Yeah. They also put Nixon on punts again. Why do you think we're not seeing them kind of ride this out with Reed a little bit more?
Well, he did have one. Reed had the one where he fair caught the ball and then
he advanced it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why Nixon was on the next punt, because they only punted a couple of times in this game.
They have some kind of there must be some rhyme or reason to it, because they both do it, but then he seems to put Nixon, and maybe he just has a feel. Bisaccia, I'm talking about, has a feel for it.
Well, part of that, you know, Nixon's playing a lot of snaps on defense. You don't want to overextend him. When they put him back there, it seems almost every time is when they're looking for a spark, which, Keyshawn Nixon, we've seen. We haven't seen it from Jaden Reed as much. Keyshawn Nixon can get more of a spark than Jaden Reed. He was an all-pro kickoff returner for a reason last year. So when they need a spark, they put him back there. But I don't think they want to overextend him because he's playing defensive starting reps. And it's not like, you know, Jaden Reed's kind of a de facto starter as the slot guy, but you're a slot corner. You're on the field all the time. It's not a rotation there.
Hmm. I also think that we have to wonder if their blocking is where it needs to be, because, again, on the returns. But also, like, on that blocked field goal, that was a really good play to block it. He should have had the grass. Jonathan Owens should have had the grass to return that for a score, I would almost
think. I can't believe how quickly Greg Joseph closed on him. I was shocked.
Yeah.
That was unreal.
Just a matter of not having the personnel on the field to get him a return?
Partly, but you want to block him, but usually you don't have to worry about the kicker. Like, the kicker closed on that play. Yeah. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, Jonathan Owens is not the fastest guy in the world either. It wasn't like if Nixon had picked that up, you know, he'd probably have gone a distance, or Alexander. Mm. But, even, yeah, that's the kind of play where they got to turn it into a touchdown. They have to do something like that.
He made Greg Joseph look like Christian Watson on that play. I couldn't believe it. It was unreal.
How lucky were they on that kickoff return? How many tackles did they miss on that kickoff return?
The Vikings kickoff return for a touchdown?
It was a holding penalty, like, across the field.
Yeah, it wasn't even with the
play. Yeah. No, it was on Valentine, and he might have caught that guy, but, Packers got really lucky on that one. That was terrible.
And so, again, that just kind of goes back to coverage on special teams. Like, you know, that's one of those things you don't think about until it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder if it's becoming a problem. Do you think so?
It's not been what it was last year. They had a ton of penalties at the beginning of the season. I don't know how much of that is youth coaching. They're obviously, when you're a young team, you're going to be even younger on special teams. Although there's some veterans that are playing those units.
I mean, the penalty on special teams today was on Dallin Leavitt.
The special teams, they've made some plays now. I mean, that blocked field goal was huge. They had to come up with a play there, and they did. But it's been shaky. They've given up a punt return touchdown. They've had some issues.
And this just goes back to lack of complimentary football. They block a field goal, they get a pretty decent return, and the offense gets no points out of it. I think they stalled in the red zone and come away with absolutely no points. Well, guys, I would say it gets easier, but that hasn't been the case so far this season. They'll face the Rams next week.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was one of those LA teams.
The easy part of the schedule
is over. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The 4-game losing streak, but the 3-game losing streak's the real jarring thing. I mean, it's the Raiders, Broncos, and the Minnesota Vikings without Justin Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
it's not good.
If they don't beat the Rams, then they got Steelers
on the road.
Got
Chargers.
Chargers. The Lions are coming up. The Chiefs are coming up.
Lions, Chiefs, in that order.
Yeah. And so all of a sudden you're like, that's like,
you could be staring down the barrel like 2-9.
Yeah.
It's not getting easier. Where are the wins left on this schedule? I mean, the Bears coming to town, maybe. Everything's a maybe, right?
Yeah.
The Carolina Panthers on the road, maybe.
Yeah.
The Vikings. Minnesota Vikings, even in Minnesota without Kirk Cousins, maybe.
Iffy. Yeah. I mean, they could win that. But, you know, they got to hope that some quarterback gets hurt or, you know.
Well, with that being said, with the Rams coming to town next week, we'll keep an eye on the Matthew Stafford injury that happened today. He injured his thumb on his throwing hand.
Maybe. That's a maybe now. They don't have Stafford, maybe.
He tried to come back in, but was not the same. So I'm sure he'll be on the injury report Wednesday. So something to watch there.
I'll take Cooper Kupp 9 for 130.
9 for 130?
Yeah. Fantasy receiver.
With any quarterback?
Any quarterback.
Who was their backup? John Wolford? Is that still who he is?
I don't know.
That's who it was at one point last year.
I remember that. Yeah.
What works maybe in their favor is, you know, the Rams have been here, what, like 3 years in a row now and haven't won a game?
It'll probably be like 80 degrees on Sunday, too.
I know.
It'll be like perfect weather for them, you know, and you know, that's just the way the Packers
Their luck has gone.
Yeah, it's not even luck. It's like, you know, they don't have anything going for them at all. Nothing.
Well, with that being said, let's end on that positive note.
So uplifting.
We will continue to have full wrap-up coverage for you of the Packers' loss to the Vikings and kind of where this team goes from here. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for all of that as well. Guys, thanks as always. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.